So it's, you know, nice to give a little bit of consent in these situations.
Yeah, no, totally.
Yeah.
It's funny. One of the pieces I'm working on is The Education of Prince Charming. I'm trying to do like a vaulted fairy tale si series, and basically the song is going from Aretha Franklin's Respect to Consent. I'm changing it to the lyrics to Consent. So it's about Prince Charming going around kissing half-dead girls in a deep slumber. So
There's a problem, you know.
exactly.
Princes kissing people who they're not meant to be kissing is something I'm well aware of, being from the UK. So, right.
No.
We'll get
Yeah.
going. Alrighty. Well, welcome to the podcast, Warren.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. I feel like it's been a long time coming. I feel like I reached out last year, and it's taken a few attempts, but we got there in the end.
No, definitely, definitely. Thank you for your patience with everything.
It's my patience and my persistence to send an email, which doesn't take too
Right.
much particular effort, but you know, I wanted to chat to you, and you seem, you know, friendly enough, so
Right, I
keep
do all
on
right.
these things. Yeah. So I have my first structured question, which may give you a slight moment of panic, which is, who are you?
Who am I? Let's see. I am a 40-something artist, stop motion artist, known pretty much right now for my movie recreation storytellings of stop motion with vintage Barbies. I'm doing it for about the past 5 years. Growing up, I wanted to be an animator for Disney. And then I was 17. My mom got a video camera. I wanted to be George Lucas. Then I came out and wanted to be a choreographer and fashion designer, all things. And it's kind of this is all kind of cultivated to use all those things. So it's been pretty good.
Kind of like a stepping stone journey of creative projects which have brought you to this point.
It kind of reminds me of the movie Slumdog Millionaire, where you find out like how they know all the answers to these questions, and you get the background on that. That's for me kind of how like I see all my talents just kind of like merging together, to have this. So yeah.
It's great to see. I mean, I did do a little Google on you. Because of, you know, I like to do a little bit of research about the people I asked to come on the show. And obviously, I saw you did illustration, and you do filmmaking just in general, and all those things. And I think that's what interested me about coming to speak to you, was because you have such a, you know, eclectic background, which is
It's so funny. I went on a date last night, and the guy was just like, "You are so eclectic." And I'm like, "Is that like personality ADHD? I don't know, but I was happy for it." And it's crazy to think that you're Googleable. Like when you really take a step back, like for me, things kind of really took off during the pandemic, and so just I didn't want to say I'm a public figure because I mean, like it's just a little too celebrity sounding for me, but like to be like. I have Google Alerts on my phone, which is kind of cool. I didn't realize how many Warren Wrights there are out there, but sometimes I've read an obituary. Yeah, there was like a point during the pandemic where articles were being written about me that I didn't know about. So a friend of mine was just like, "Oh, just put a Google Alert on it," and it was cool. It was like there was a moment where I was having like I had an article in like Italy written about me. So, yeah, I it's definitely been a journey. Illustration was like a big part of it for me. There's a part where I wanted to do my own line of cards. So I was thinking about doing that. Sometimes people would hire me to draw off cards for their friends. So I'd sit them down and I'd be like, what kind of jokes do you guys share? What kind of trying to get a concept for the card, like a one of a kind card. And then I would draw the person, and my artist style kind of it's a little mid-century, kind of Archie's-esque. So I would like create cards for them, and people loved it. They were like, I have a friend of mine whose partner is so rich, I don't know what to get him. They can get anything, and they're just like, oh my God, get one of Warren's cards. There was a time a couple years ago. Well, I usually do a Christmas card for my friends. Every year, and I, it's me illustrating some kind of funny Christmas scene. And there was the one where it was after the election, and I drew me opening up a present, and it was a Jack in the Box Trump, and coming out of the box, and you see Santa in the background, and I was like, Santa, wait, come back. And then Santa's like, don't be such a boozy whore next year. And it was like the nightmare before Christmas. And I just sent it to my friends, and it was just insane when like all my friends started posting it on Facebook. So then I got like a little blurb in like Outbuzz, and for me that was like kind of like my first like push forward into anything I guess in the public domain. And then with the with the stop motion, it was just one of those things. It was like time and place. Like people always tell me like you had the best pandemic. For me, it all kind of started where I was watching this Netflix documentary on The Toys That Made Us, and they did this
Remember
one
so,
on, yeah, they did this one on Barbie, and I love mid-century, I love kitsch. Growing up, my mother and my sister were like had collected dolls, but I knew a lot about it, but it just wasn't my thing. So I was watching this documentary, and they were talking about all the messed up Barbies that they made, and one of the ones that caught my eye was they made like clothing sets, and one of them was from 1964 called Slumber Party. It came with like a little robe, lingerie, a weight scale permanently set at 110 pounds, with a little book that said how to lose weight, and on the back of it it said don't eat. I'm on eBay with this thing. I find it, I think it's hysterical.
that's
I think
brutal.
it's just, sometimes we have to like look back and see why we are the way we are. Why, and there's so much stories behind that. And like, for me, I always try to like my life philosophy is whatever happens to you in life, as long as you can spin it into a funny party, a funny story to tell at parties, so be it. Because you really got to pull the humor from things. And so I started doing more research on things and stuff, I love mid-century. I love the aesthetic. And I just, so then I, from there, like, I'm like, okay, well, what am I gonna do with this stuff? I'm like, you know what? Let me do a diorama. Let me like make a diorama of Barbie on the weight, like on the weight scale with Midge kneeling next to her with the book. And so that kind of got me going a little bit in set building. And then there was this YouTube series called The Most Popular Girls in School, where they do stop motion with Barbies and stuff like that. And it's crude, it's super funny, and it, like with the series, like the stop motion and the sets, it gets more progressive and really well. It's done, it gets so much better. And so that kind of like put the idea in my head, and I started messing around with it like a little bit, nothing too crazy. And then I moved back to New York, and I wound up getting sober. And I got sober, I think a year later the pandemic hit, and I just kind of started with the stop motion and set building stuff like that. And I had seen someone do this like Marilyn Monroe stop motion, and I was like, wow, that's, she needs justice. And I went and I kind of obsessed about it, and like it's the pandemic was just hitting, and so I did a mashup of Two Girls from Little Rock and Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend. Next thing I know, someone messages me on Instagram. They're like, hey, Bill Greene posted this on his Facebook page. And I was like, oh my God, he's like the principal design, one of the principal designers from Mattel. And I was just like, so that was, I mean, that was super cool. And then next thing I know, I'm like, so with Diamonds, it was interesting because it's just one doll moving and the rest of the male dolls are just kind of going around her. So when I approached Bob Fosse's Rich Man's Fruit, which I was calling Frug for like the longest time till I was on this guy's show, and he's like, so it's Rich Man's Frug, and I was like, oh, was such a, so with that number, I was like, okay, well, all the dolls are doing the same movement. So pandemic, it's full blown pandemic, and I have nothing but time, and really, like in a way, like Barbie saved my sobriety, and I was just able to pour myself into this, just get lost in it. And I'm like literally like with the sets, and then I have like my laptop with my broken down laptop that sometimes I couldn't get to YouTube, but it was like starting a car where if I hit enter enough times, then I could get it up. So I was watching, you know, this Bob Fosse number and the whole thing. And, you know, I did it in dolls. And it was this time and place. I had a captive audience. People were looking for stuff. People wanted to get an escape. And next thing I know, like 75,000 views, 2,000 shares, all on Facebook. I mean, this thing is just blowing up. It's crazy. I got a write-up in Dance Magazine. And, you know, I didn't go to art school. I mean, I've been an artist my whole life, and I didn't go to art school. So, like, it was one of those things where, like, before my interview with Dance Magazine, I went in a spiral. I had imposter syndrome. I was just like, thankfully, I went to a meeting before, before the interview. I went to a Zoom meeting before the interview, and, you know, I just let it out. And, you know, everybody was just so, like, great and just, like, helping me out. They're like, it's normal. I had the interview, like, it came out. And it was super cool. Like, you know, for me, I'm from Los Angeles. And it's one of those things where people are like, oh, like, I'm an actor, I'm a model. And you're like, are you? So for me to call myself an artist, it was something that kind of like, well, I don't have a degree, so... It was something I struggled with. And a friend of mine, when that article came out, was just like, you know, he's from Argentina. He's like, Bob, it's just like, it's in print now. You're an artist. And that was like, boom, you know, no one can take that away from me. And then what was really cool about that was the lead dancer from the movie. Oh my God, her name is Cheryl. Sorry, I forgot her name. She had reached out to me on Facebook, and she's like, hi, Cheryl Charney. She had reached out to me on Facebook. She said, hi, you don't know me, but I'm, you know, the ponytail girl, the Bob Fosse number. And I'm just like, you know, I die. It was like a gag. She's like, you captured the number, you know, so wonderfully, you know, the attitude and everything, you know, it was just amazing. That was just huge. That was, that was like the first big one. And I really missed the time that I had during the pandemic. Cause, you know, I have a day job and I don't make money off of these cause they're, cause all the music's copyrighted. So I get demonetized. So it's really, you know, loving it for the love of doing it. And, I think the next one, I did George Michael's Freedom. The, you know, Barbie reenactment of that, because, you know, for me, that song was like everything, being a, you know, young closeted gay kid, but just kind of like going through the coming out process. And so that was, you know, that one did really well. And then the other big one I had at that time was Barbara Streisand's Don't Rain on My Parade from Funny Girl, where, I mean, if you watch the stuff, it's like a side by side, and I recreate the sets, and I'm like sitting there, you know, sometimes I'll go back and watch my stuff, and I'm like, I created a train set. Like, this bitch is on a train set going through, you know, and I'm like, how did, you know, what possessed me to do this?
You're going to hear you take yourself on an emotional journey of just trying to realize what you did and went, oh, I forgot I did that.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, it's really crazy. And people's responses to it. I think, with that one, I dedicated it to like a time and place / bar in New York, where they used to have musical Mondays. And it was like such a magical place because there were no iPhones or anything. So you just had these people watching these musical numbers on huge screen TVs. When Don't Rain on My Parade would come on, when she hits that one note on the tugboat, I was like throwing napkins, and it was just such a great moment. And I just kind of wanted to like, just remember, like just kind of dedicate it to a feeling. And it's just kind of weird. Like I'm from like the generation where like on the radio, you would dedicate songs to people and stuff like that. Or even my school newspaper, your kids would dedicate songs and stuff like that. So for me, it was just kind of like, I know some of my numbers, it's just, you don't know what people are going to respond to, how they're going to react. A lot of what I try to do is create something and then just give it up to the universe. And, you know, but yeah, this one woman, she's like, I'm 70 years old. And I cried. She's like, you combine my love of Barbie and Barbara together. And I think it's been really cool. The one thing that everybody says about my stuff, it brings them so much joy. And, that's, it's really something. It's really something. I don't have to be making money off of this, although anybody out there that wants to hire me. But just kind of be giving back is cool. I just like the notoriety.
I think it's kind of like I mean, I found you just through stop motion stuff. Like I found you. I moved to New York 2 years ago. Started looking up for stop motion animators in New York and thought, who's around? What's happening? And what I found about yours was it seemed very honest. And I think I said this to you in the email I sent you, is that it seemed very honest and it seemed very playful. And that came through instantly in everything you were making, of like, you're doing this and you're just enjoying making the stuff you're doing. And that is, I feel like that's rarer now when you do stumble across things, because people are so focused on whatever is popular or whatever is kind of coming through an algorithm. And like you, I'm from a generation where you stumble across things and you see passion projects, and that very much came through. And it's great to hear that you've kind of gone on that journey of just finding audiences after audiences. Because I was curious who the audience for this is when I first found it. I was like, is it collectors? Is it musical lovers? What is the balance?
it's crazy. I feel like I've kind of like just been in different stages with like audiences and stuff like that. Part of like what I wanted to do, like what I love, is taking like vintage classic Barbie, like classic Americana, and spinning it on its head and putting it into like a whole other scene. Like, there's definitely like one of my early ones. I kind of did an homage to Carrie, and I kind of did it for collectors, where I use like the vintage like prom dresses and stuff like that. So I wanted them to appreciate it. But then like I love to use Mario. In some of my videos, just for like the comedic factor, just to kind of have a contrast. Now, like, so one of the videos I did, Copacabana, it sat at like, maybe 3,000 views for a while. I really loved that one. It was one of my favorites. And, it was like, did maybe about like a year and a half ago, and it just kind of sat there. And again, just, pushing through. And next thing I know, it's like I'm getting all these comments from YouTube, like, oh, this person commented, and all that stuff. And it's like at 91,000 views right now. And something was trending, from what I heard. A guy on TikTok was throwing pizza dough into the air of Copacabana, and people started to research the song. And, with Copacabana, like, I have G.I. Joe heads. I have one of the Bond villains. In it, I have Mario, so it's I guess more of like a guy's guy video, but there's definitely Broadway people that love. When I did Fruit, and I did Don't Rain on My Parade, that got a whole other audience. And with like Fruit, with Broadway dancers, they would message me and they were just like, oh my gosh, I was in this number, it was really great. I had one woman, my friend Kimberly, she sent me her vintage Barbies from the 60s, from her childhood. And, she's like, I want you to give them new life. She was a ballet dancer and a back in the day. And when I recreated the birds, the girl who loses her glasses as they're running away from the schoolyard, that's her Skipper doll. And she was, I was in a screening in San Francisco, and she had come out to see it. And she was so proud of her Skipper doll, like, getting her falling down and having the glasses fall off. Yeah, it's really different. I was in a Carly Rae Jepsen concert with a friend of mine in New Jersey over the summer, and this guy came up to me, and I had on this Teen Wolf t-shirt, and which I was very proud of. I just got it that day, and he comes up to me, he's like, oh man, thank you so much for your content. And for a moment I thought he was talking about my shirt, and then as he was talking, I was like, oh my god, like, you're talking about my stop motion. And my friends were like, look at you. So it was, it's been cool. I get recognized here and there. That makes it pretty cool. And then, with the Barbie movie, it's interesting because it's kind of like, what do they call them? Like Johnny Come Latelys or bandwagon people. It's kind of opened up my, work to an even wider audience. And I had the LA Times Today Show do a segment on me, and that was huge for me. That was really huge for me, especially like being sober and just kind of like having this new life and really just kind of like going forward with my creativity and letting that lead me. I'm hugely grateful. It's, you know, a lot of me when I create this stuff, I just think about, you know, I'll just create it and maybe like down the line, there'll be a renaissance and somebody mm-hmm. will find it. And, you know, it's up and down. It's up and down on things. I'm just grateful. It's pretty cool. Basically, I always say it makes it interesting for dating when, you know, people are like, oh, what do you do? And I'm like, oh, I have my day job, but I also do this. You know, I'm like, let me just get this out of the way right now. You know?
It's like I'm secretly kind of famous, but I'm also kind of famous for this, which you may or may not vibe with.
Yeah, but thankfully, you know, you learn the trash takes itself out, yes. And it's you know, being part of the doll community is just pretty cool. It's just they're such characters.
I did wonder like whether people get precious about it, because obviously there's a level of like. Not damage, but modification you have to do whenever you're doing these things, and you know, costumes or makeup or whatever you have to do to dolls. And I do know a lot of collectors really dislike when people change things, and I wondered whether you experienced that.
People are pretty hardcore. But you know, for me, like depending on what it is, like I try to use dolls that are what they call TLC, you know, in need of tender loving care. So if they're already kind of a little messed up, then, you know, I'll use them. Because what happens is the made-to-move bodies that they have a really thick neck knob. And the vintage ones, the hole isn't meant for that. So I have to kind of carve into the neck hole to make it bigger, to make it fit. And obviously that, you know, devalues the doll head. But if it's already kind of messed up, you know, I'm bringing it to life, and you know, who knows, like maybe someday, like I always like to, you know, picture or dream of like having an exhibit at the Met or something where they just show all the dolls and all the scenes and you know, there could be more something then. But yeah, it's a lot of what I do is I'll grab the reproduction dolls from the 90s and I'll grab a bunch of them on eBay and stuff like that and kind of hoard them. So it's one of those things where my friends are like, why do you have so many dolls? And I'm like, well, they're kind of like a dead stock in a sense. So if I'm creating new characters, I'm going to need all that I can have.
So if anyone's struggling to buy these dolls online, they know this because you've bought them all.
Oh, right. Seriously. I do okay. And then, I mean, I do find stuff at flea markets.
Yeah.
Flea markets are, but you know, people are like, wow, you find stuff at flea markets all the time. And I'm like, I go you know, before I go to work on Saturdays, I'll hit up like three flea markets, like super early in the morning and then just go to work. But I mean, there's a lot of times where I just don't find anything. But also I'll look at something. I'm like, oh, I could, you know, use this for this. So it's not always like dolls. Sometimes it's just like props and stuff like that I'm, you know, that I'm looking for and come across.
I think it's good because you've got that, it's not like the... You kind of go beyond like a DIY aesthetic, I think, for with your stuff, because it looks very handmade. It looks very, you know, well professionally manicured, and everything looks great. And it kind of proves what you can do with some commitment and some time with just the resources around you. And I in some ways, I mean, I think that's why audience connect with it as well, because they see it and they think, well, you know, I have figures, I have dolls, I could do something like this, and it's very inspiring in that sense.
Thanks. It was funny because like after the pandemic, things were opening up. I had like a job at an art gallery, being like an art handler, like, you know, one day a week, and I got let go of that job. And, you know, the next day, the National Barbie Convention calls me and wants to hire me for two videos. And it's just, you know, and I say this just because like on Instagram and everything, it's just, everyone's perfect. The life's perfect and all that stuff. And I'm like, shit happens. You know, like, you know, people are just like, if you're having a moody day, you're having a moody day. Like, it, you know, it's normal. So, you know, I lost that job. And then I get a call from the National Barbie Convention. It's interesting because what happened was I just finished my Dita Von Teese video. And she had reposted it to her story. And I got like 10,000 views in one day. It was like nuts. And then, yeah, the next day, the National Barbie Convention calls me. And they want me to do two videos because it's during the pandemic and you know, the convention, everything was online. And I was like, guys, I'm not high tech. I do this all on my phone. And they're like, we love what you do, you know? And it was one of those things where it's like, you know, the people that love Barbie, who like hold Barbie dear to them, hired me to do, you know, to do this. It really, I mean, it meant a lot. It meant a lot. It was really cool. And it really kind of gave me even like a little bit more confidence. And those two pieces I did were some of my favorite work. You know, one of them was the 60th anniversary of the Ken doll. And I had worked with this guy, Bill Blitman, who, you know, has this amazing Barbie collection. And he loaned me out some of the vintage outfits. And it was just, I'm doing my research and the whole thing. And, you know, obviously, and it's funny with the Barbie movie because, you know, I've seen a lot of interviews with Greta Gerwig and, you know, she talks about her inspirations. And I was just like, wow, I actually, you know, for like the Ken one, like the opening, like the monochromatic color sequences are all based off of An American in Paris and Leslie Caron has her introduction. So, after that, like, you know, the finale of the 60th anniversary of the Ken doll is kind of like Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend inspired, where it's, you know, instead of like all the guys in the same suit, you know, I have Barbie in the black dress running up the stairs. And every time there's like this great like big band feel to it. And there's this trumpet in the song. Every time she's going up the stairs and the trumpet hits, a different generation of Kens like pops up in like the different outfits and stuff like that. And then she does a stage dive, you know? And what was cool was I don't really storyboard. I will listen to the song 1,000 times and I'll be picturing it in my head. And it's so funny. I've walked past people on the street because I've like have my headphones on and I'm just like, you know, thinking, you know, going like that. But this one with the Ken one, I storyboarded it. And, you know, I used like, I Photoshopped like vintage illustrations and stuff like that to scene so they kind of see what I was going for. And they were just like, you gave us what we wanted without us knowing what we wanted. So it was, you know, it was awesome. And it really, you know, I credit that a lot with, you know, even giving me more confidence with that. Because it's tough. Like, you know, I see, it's interesting because now Mattel does, you know, more stop motion stuff for their, you know, for their advertisements. And I look at that stuff and I'm like, God, it's so good. You know, like my stuff is such shit. It's so good. And my sister was like, first of all, they have like thousands of dollars, you know, that they're using for that. You know, another friend of mine, like, they're like, your stuff has soul. And it's, you know, and I appreciate that. Cause I mean, you know, it's just, it's so easy to doubt yourself with all that is there is out there. And I try to like, not look at it too much, you know? But it's just, I'm human.
I mean, it's interesting to hear you kind of talk about that. Cause I was talking to another guest about, how easy it is to kind of see a piece of artwork and not know the background going into that artwork. Like she'd seen some of my illustration stuff and said, and asked me to tell me what it was about. So I explained what it was about. And she sat there and went, I didn't realize there was this many layers to what you'd put out. And when I watched your videos, there was a level of assumption that they were very well researched, but it was mainly the assumption that they were researched off your personal interests of just like, you know, you're super into this moment or this scene. So you happen to know everything about it. So the fact that you have to go out and do these extra things, you put thought and time and extra process into it, it shines through. It shines through as that kind of the honest thing. And yet, like you say, with other companies or bigger companies, I think stop motion's made a bit of a comeback, but they do have all the money in the world. So the fact that you're able to achieve this is fantastic. Yeah.
Thanks. You know, and also like for me, like I, everything I do is a straight point shoot. I don't have like a rig to hold the figures up. So I'll have like, you know, a base with like a wood dowel and I'll hide the wood dowel, you know, and I'll do the wood base in the same color of whatever the floor, you know, the floor is. So you can kind of see it. But it's, I mean, I don't know, part of it's just kind of, you know, it just gives it a different feel, a different texture. And I think that's, you know, what people like. And it's, you know, I do it all on my phone. So it's, you know, I have a friend of mine.
That's absolute madness that you just do this on your phone.
Yeah. I have a friend of mine who's an animator, Glitter Poop Productions, shout out. He's just like, you know, yeah, he's just like, it's amazing what you do with it, but like, you know, let's try to, you know, push it to like, you know, the next level and stuff like that. And I'm an old man. I'm like, new technology? Like, you're killing me. Like, I would love to, and I see it, but I'm just like, so it's, yeah, it's interesting. But yeah, I'm like, I'm grateful for everything, but it's interesting with the evolution of things and just like projects and, you know, it's out there and, you know, people have suggestions, you know, like, you know, how about doing this? How about doing that? And, you know, it's one of those things where like, for me, I have to have a partial connection to it, to obsess yeah. about it, to listen to it for like, you know, forever.
Yeah. I could see that. Yeah. I mean, that was kind of like a follow-up question of where do you expect to take this to? Like, is this something where you just see yourself making scenes, or is this something you see doing like a longer shot of?
I definitely have like parody stuff, original stuff that I want to do. I have a series that I want to do, like that I was talking about earlier, called Falsehood Fairy Tales. The premiere one I had done was Hansel and Gretel. And, you know, I just, for me, like the whole thing, I just think it's really funny that like people try to project modern views on classic fairy tales. And it's just kind of like, you know, it's a lens back at that time, you know, and especially now being older, like, you know, people just don't understand like how things were at that time. And, you know, like before the internet, like people have so much information on things. You could be the expert on everything, you know, like I was talking to one of the kids I work with and talking about like the mall and how the mall was such like a nucleus and such like a environment and how like you didn't really know much of what was going on like outside of like your city. So going back to the Fault of Fairy Tales, like I want you to do this one on Prince Charming, where, you know, the prince is about to go off and, you know, with his white steed into the kingdom looking for maidens in distress, and the king kind of is like, yo, we need to have a conversation, and, you know, we need to have the talk. And the prince is just like, aren't I a little old for the talk? And he's just like, no, son. He's like, we need to talk about what it looks like when you go around kissing, you know, kissing maidens in a half dead slumber. And but the prince is like, but father, you know, if they're in a half dead, and, you know, the king covers his mouth, and then cue Aretha Franklin's Respect playing, but instead of respect, it's consent. So it's just like, you know, so what you want, maiden's got it. What you need, prince has got it. All I'm asking is that you get consent. And then the knights in the background will be like, just remember it. Just remember it, you know, consent. So, and they'd be like, consent. Don't be thinking with your D. consent. Ask for it constantly. Whoa. So, you know, now I'm trying to like, I obviously can't sing. So, but it's just like being able to create the music and finding a singer. You know, there's that stuff that like, I don't really know how to do. So, you know, maybe collaborating, you know, with other people. And also, I mean, I don't have the money. I have like a day job. So it's just like, you know, I want to pay people what they're worth, you know, or just have, but I'm not making any money off of this right now. So right now it's, you know, doing it for the love of doing it. But yeah, I have like another, what I want to do with like a spoof of Goldilocks and the Three Bears, you know, one of, you know, the Little Mermaid. You know, and then I have, other projects that I want to do. But yeah, I mean, I enjoy creating content, but it's one of those things where, where would I love this to go? Where I get paid, where I can do this full time. Cause it's hard, you know, to have a day job and you're there 8 hours. And then, you know, I have an hour commute each way, which I don't mind because I can research and I do all my editing on my phone. So it's, you know, it's productive, but, yeah, I mean, I would love to do like a series. I mean, even just kind of like, you know, mini movies. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you need actors, voiceovers and stuff like that. So it's, you know, it's an ongoing process. And I mean, and it's just interesting too, because, you know, Barbie is like, it's the medium that I work in. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe kind of slowly slide in like how I slid Mario in there and, you know, creating other characters. I definitely would love to grow it. It's definitely given me like self-worth in a way, because it's, right. You know, one of the things as you get older, you no longer rely on the charms of your youth to like get you by the next thing. So it's, you know, the fact that I have this and, you know, people, when they see it, a lot of times they're impressed. And it's just like, this is so cool that you do this. And it's just like, yeah, I'm a geek, you know?
I think that's it's an interesting point. Like, I mean, you mentioned the kind of like the work-life balance of when you're trying to make something and when you want to do you do want to explore something creative. You know, you like you say, you work 8 hours a day, you go home, and then you've got to do that thing as well, and then you have to have a social life on top of that, and you can like telling friends you can't go out because you're doing this and having them
Yeah.
understand that there is a balance which you're trying to strike. Like, I'll have weekends where I'll say to people, I'm not going out and doing anything this weekend because I need to do the thing which makes me feel good when I'm doing it. And as you say, like as you get older, I think that becomes more and more of a challenge because you don't have the time of your youth. You don't have the energy of your youth.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a real there's a real tricky balance, I think.
Yeah, sometimes I'll be out, especially now that I'm sober. I'm just like, I'd rather be home animating. But I'm like, I need to get out. You
Need that in a
know?
t-shirt. Just that I'd rather be home animating.
Totally, seriously. Yeah, it's just one of those, things. But also, like, I know I need to be like, current on things. And it's funny, a friend of mine with Drag Race, he was just kind of like, oh my God, it's a Cher episode. You gotta repost Dark Lady. And TikTok is still kind of a challenge. Yes, TikTok is a challenge. I mean, just the internet in general is just a fucking challenge. When I did my Mariah Carey Christmas video, this guy puts on my as one of the comments on YouTube. He's like, maybe the problem with your views is the length of the video. And I'm like, I go on his YouTube. I'm like, you have 8 subscribers. I'm like it was 4 minutes. It was 4 minutes of a Christmas song. I was just like, it's just one of those things. Like I was Facebook was funny because Facebook was kind of like, you would do paragraphs, updates, and maybe like a picture with a paragraph, and then came a Instagram, where it was just like, a picture, but with like a bunch of hashtags. And now TikTok is like under a minute a video. And I'm like, okay, where do you tell stories? Like, where do you, yeah. So it's one of those things where I kind of have to like focus on, on me. Like, I'm a relic from a certain generation. And I'm okay with that. But it's interesting, it's, but with TikTok and Share, I posted like a minute clip from my Dark Lady video, and that kind of like opened me to like another audience. And it was just funny because a lot of it was Drag Race politics, like in the comments and stuff like that. It's amazing what people pick up on. And then it's even funny too with I don't really delete like negative comments on my YouTube. I don't respond to them. Other people do, which is kind of amazing. My roommate's always just like, well, you shouldn't read the comments. And I'm just like, don't, I mean, you have to have an interaction, with your subscribers. And I don't have like your fan base. I'm like, I don't have that concept is just kind of like, but I have a friend of mine who's pretty big on Instagram and stuff like that. So he's kind of like my Yoda. Shout out to Alex Ringler. It's kind of guided me through some things and stuff like that. So it's yeah, it's just but yeah, the comments and stuff like that are just really crazy to me. Even like when I did the Dita Von Teese one, the Barbie Von Teese one, I cracked up because this woman was just like, whoever did this needs Jesus. Bappies. She misspelled Barbies. Bappies. Bappies are for little girls to play with and not do gross things with, And people just were flying to my defense. It was amazing,
Amazing.
yeah, it just cracked me up with some of the stuff out there. So it's just but there's no like if you're like a Joe Schmo, there's no like PR training,
No.
so I yeah, so I'm just kind of like just I'm just kind of winging it, but like I think just even I think being a gay person, especially a gay person of a certain age, where you kind of had to fight through like just fight through these comments that people would have. I remember like having a situation like on Facebook where this guy that I went to junior high with, I like sleepovers at house and stuff like that, was just posting all this homophobic shit. And I was just like, dude, he made a comment on my school, like first grade picture, class picture, And he's like, oh, I recognize some of these people. And I was like, yeah, that kid in the back row, third from the right, you're literally condemning him to hell. You know, this kid that was your friend, you're saying, you know, you're condemning him to hell. And, you know, it kind of, him and I kind of got to thing, and then everybody just kind of like rushed in, and it was this whole dialogue and stuff like that. So in a way, it kind of like built me up a little bit to like, you know, people saying shitty things about you, you know, which I'm grateful for. I'm not completely immune to it, because you can have like 100 compliments a night, but you'll remember that one, you know, that one negative thing. So it's interesting just kind of like, you know, people's takes and stuff like that. You know, I was really sweating it with Mommy Dearest, you know, with the Mommy Dearest Dalmatian. You know, it's you know, a lot of people are like, don't do it, don't show the beating, stuff like that. But it's a reenactment, you know, and I'm not going to tell my, you know, my audience that I'm not giving you the choice to see this, no. You know? And, you know, I had my, you know, my ass beat by my father. So it was just like, it's not like I'm completely insensitive to it, but it's one of those things where it's just like, it's an overtop movie. And not only that, but it's like a Madame Alexander doll, which were like, you know, if you're growing up, they were the like little dolls that you weren't supposed to play with and the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So it kind of even makes you even funnier. But I also like do a dedication to, you know, my gay mother, you know, who I saw this movie at her house, and like what, in a way, you know, what it meant to me, what it meant to the gay community. And for the most part, I mean, it's been pretty good, like 90% like positive response. I got to see it this film festival in Palm Springs, the Cinema Diverse, and you know, being on the internet at home, pandemic, hearing the comments is one thing, but sitting in a theater with people watching your work was pretty mind blowing. I was at this film festival in San Francisco where they did a half hour of my stuff. And it was called Divas and Dalmatian. And my sister surprised me and flew up to San Francisco to see it. And it was just really cool. I just, you know, I was just so quiet, just trying to hear everybody's comments. And I did like a Britney Spears one, the Work Bitch one. But with that one, I took out all the glamour girls and I did Working Women. So I did like a stewardess, I did a school teacher, I did, you know, all, like a fireman and all that, a firewoman and all that. And, you know, this guy is clean behind me. He's like, that's the choreography from the video. I was like, yes, he gets it. So, yeah, it's been pretty cool.
Yeah, I think you're right as well. Like, you can't, obviously there's topics which, I mean, I allow the guest to pick the topic. So I may end up in a situation where I'm like, do I really want to do this video? I don't know if I want to get in this. But I think the internet's a weird place because you can't shrink wrap all your content just because of the platform or just because of the negative comments you may receive, because some people are going to be okay with viewing it. You know, not everyone has the same background. Not everyone has the same day-to-day life. And I think you have to, in some way, engage with it. Like you say, not respond to it necessarily, but at least see that to remind yourself that you may end up in a public situation, like an event where someone's showing your work and someone comes along. It's just like, no, this is terrible. This is the worst thing. And it reminds you that the reality is different just outside the little bubble which you're in. And I think younger eyes struggle with that because they just see it as, oh, well, this is an attack on, you know, me or my work, where it's not necessarily personal. It's just someone's responding to it.
I think you grow from it. I love that we're in an age of memes, because like memes are like the new bumper sticker, you know? And I remember seeing one that said, there's been no piece of art that's been universally liked by everyone. And I really thought about that, you know, and it was just one of those things where it's just like, you just have to be true to yourself. And if you don't like it, don't watch it.
That's fine. Also, speaking of that, you reminded me of a meme which I saw the other day, which was, it's the one with the two fingers and two buttons, and they're pressing both buttons. And one of the buttons says, I'm glad for the lessons which my life has taught me. And the other one just says, but on some level, I feel like I shouldn't have had to go through some of that shit. And I'm like, yeah, I'm grateful with the lessons I've learned from my life. But some of that shit was a bit too much. I feel everyone's dealing with that same balance of just, yeah, we're all a bit tougher because we've had tough situations. But at the same time, no one, some other people shouldn't have to go through that. So we're progressing, gradually progressing.
I always say, like, with being sober, like, you know, the best part of being sober is you get your feelings back. being sober is you get your feelings back. So I yeah I oh my gosh, I get so emotional about this. Like I could cry. Like I was like, it's one of those things where it just, you know, comes out. Oh God, am I doing this now? And I have an ugly cry, which is really awful. So it's just like, you know, even like sharing a friend of mine, you know, my friend that really kind of like pushed me to get sober about the LA Times piece. I was just bawling. We're at this restaurant and I'm just bawling and I'm trying to put it together. And he's just like, you know what the worst part is? People are thinking I'm breaking with you, you know? And it was just like, thankfully that just broke it. I was cracking up. But it was just, yeah, it was just so much, yes, you know, so much gratitude with everything. And I think it's, you know, art, it's so personal. It's something that you're creating and putting your time in. And it's just like, and then you're putting it out there into the world for, you know, anyone to see and attack. And so when you get like, you know, the pop or people's reactions to it, it really means something, you know, because it's not like you can't buy your way into this. Like I don't, you know, I'm not privileged. I don't, you know, in the conventional way where like I have something that pushes me in here. This is something that like is, you know, been from the ground up. And it's been really cool. And it's, you know, that's one of the stories. It's like, it's come out of, it came out of, after a really dark point in my life where I just thought, not only did I let myself down, I let my family down, and friends kind of like, you kind of have this. And, you know, it's small. I mean, I don't have, you know, delusions of grandeur or whatever. It's small, but it's, you know, it's a blip, you know, it's Googleable. And it's been really cool. And it's, you know, also on the other side, it's like, oh, what am I going to do next? Or I have to tap this. It's, you know, there's that pressure. And it's like the pressure to constantly create, you know, and it's like one after the other, like, you know, sometimes there's, you know, the pressure of that I'm trying to find, you know, you know, having a job, you know, and having a social life, trying to go to the gym, which I haven't been in forever, you know, going to meetings and all that stuff. It's a hamster wheel, and I consumed way too many Bang energy drinks that I care to admit to.
You got to take care of yourself. That's the thing. And I think it, like you say, it is a very truthful medium. So it does bring out a lot of emotion for anyone who ventures into it, because it takes a lot of bravery to do creation of any kind. And I think it's fantastic that you managed to kind of like find that and find that point, which it kind of brings me to my second to last question of the day, which we've touched on as we went along, you know,
I
which is
told
when
you
you
I go
think of.
everywhere.
You know, that's the best thing about this. Like that, this is why I like doing these podcasts. We get to talk about everything. But it's like, so if you think of yourself when you were, you know, little as a kid, and you think of yourself today, is this what you saw yourself doing?
I'm probably gonna cry.
Yeah, I don't want to put
Because,
pressure
you
on you to
know,
cry on it. So.
no, it's I was talking to this about my, you know, my roommate the other day, where like, you know, so much I think about our life, you know, it's about healing that inner kid. And I think for me growing up, with gays of my generation, you had a shame about being gay, about being different, about, my mom, you know, I used to, whew, I used to play with string puppets because it was kind of like playing with dolls, but being under the radar. And I would make the clothes and stuff like that. I was like stapling them. And, my mom walked in on me one day and she taught me how to sew. So it was like one of those things where like, there was, you know, that part of me. And then there was like the part of me that wanted to be a Disney animator that didn't, you know, that didn't come to fruition and stuff like that. And, and I think in a way, in doing this, you know, I'm healing that little kid. You know, he's actually creating something that, oh God, tells you how to cry. That, you know, he's creating something, and you know, he's getting that validation that you know, that he's worth something. That expecting that. You know, they always say like as an adult, you're trying to heal your inner child. And you know, I think about that kid, and you know, I once had a hypnotherapy session where which I completely, you know that, and my hypnotherapist, she was just kind of like, you know, you're gonna be that person that's gonna save your 9-year-old self. Because like for me, like I never like had a, like a male role model, male figure in my life. And, whoever came in kind of like always had walked out, and you're going to be that person for yourself. And, I think about, where I am now and just, having that for that kid. And, it's cool. I never would have thought, I never would have thought that, he'd have that. He'd have, this and have people respond to it. And it's been really cool. It's been really cool. Cause you sit there as a kid and you sit in our classes and you're like, God, these people are so good. Cause you always have that one mother effer that draws like Michelangelo, in your art class. And you're like, what the fuck? Well, how do you draw like that? I had a friend of mine, that I grew up with, and he's like, you know what they're doing, Warren? They're in arts, they're in their parents' basement, like drawing like that. They're not doing anything with it. So, but as a young kid, you're just like, fuck, you're so overwhelmed. And, you have all your insecurities and your emotions and stuff like that. And you're just, you don't know what to do with them. So, so it's been, I feel like it feels really good in a way that I'm kind of healing that, that inner kid, if any of that makes sense.
It made so much sense. And yeah, I think you should definitely be proud of it. And it's, thank you for sharing, because it's, obviously it is a vulnerable thing to talk about, and yeah, I think you're right. I think everyone, especially when you get to ages around 30 to 40, you look back to your childhood and you think, what am I doing, what would they think of me now? And yeah, I think you're entirely right. It's, we look to ourselves as role models for children, which we once were, and that's amazing. That's a fantastic journey to take, and you should keep going because you're making great stuff.
I plan to until I run out of dolls.
Until you run out of dolls, which will never happen because the world's full of plastic, right?
Right? Oh, seriously. I'm saving a sea turtle somewhere by recycling old dolls. So.
That's a brutal but wonderful point to round this out on. I only have one more question for you. And it will put you slightly on the spot, which is, it's amazing to talk to you. And I love finding new people to speak to and kind of get involved and learn about the work and what they're doing. But who should I speak to next after speaking to you?
Oh, gosh.
It would be great to have them. I feel like this one always stuns people. Their brain just goes blank.
I'm trying to think. Do you just like visual artists, or do you do musicians, or
I do anybody? They can be visual, they can be musicians, they can be just random people you happen to know and think would be nice to chat to for an hour. As I say, we let these conversations go where they're meant to go. That's what I'd like to do.
I have a friend of mine, Maria Flor. She's in this group. Oh my gosh, why am I blanking on this group? Oh, hold on, 2 seconds, please.
A lot of people have people in mind, and then they automatically blank on names.
Oh my gosh.
Camp Bedford. I do it all the time. Camp Bedford, okay.
Camp Bedford. It's this trio of three girls, and they're just amazing, and they're just kind of like picking up. And, with Maddie, she has a, this great acting background. She does like a lot of stage work and stuff like that. A lot of training, and she has a pretty interesting story. So I mean, definitely, I think that her, she'd be somebody really cool.
I'll definitely reach out. If they know you, they've got to be cool people. That's the way it goes, man. Yeah. It's like a chain letter from the '90s. We're just stringing people together.
Yeah.
As soon as someone breaks the chain, my show stops. So that's the way to do it. It's been lovely to catch up with you, and thank you.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for having me. This was really cool. It's kind of therapeutic in a way. Yeah.
Well, I had another guest, Dave Zakin, who's a potter in Brooklyn. He told me that he thinks podcasts are free therapy, and that's the way to treat them. Is just you get on and you talk for an hour, and it's basically just free therapy because you're just talking through things.
Yeah, I was cracking up because I saw a thing where it's just like, if you want two men to have a heart and heart, put a microphone in between them, and they call it a podcast.
That's amazing. I love that. Well, thank you for coming along. And yeah, and hopefully,
Yeah, thanks for having
you'll
me.
continue to make things out, and I'll put links and everything so people can check out your work and see the things which I saw, which is fantastic too.
Awesome.
All right. Well, on that note, we'll talk to these guys later. Let's stop.
Sounds good.